on the Guy James Show. Here in the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shears, Music Director. And don't forget, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm caught a little unprepared because I'm getting clips ready for you. It is, of course, the fifth anniversary of the Iraq War. And I thought it was important to take a look back at the administration and how they have sold this war to us for so long. You probably heard the Vice President of the United States, Dick Cheney, and how he approached the war. And if you'll just give me a few seconds, I'm going to load this up and play them for you. So, Bob, play a little bit of music. I'm going to load these videos up. We're back. I needed that little interlude there to gather up some tapes for you. I think I wanted you to hear exactly how this administration has sold the war over the past 5 years, a war that has now taken, as you know, 4,000 deaths of American servicemen and women, and not to mention a million Iraqis or so, counting. It's kind of hard to know at this point. And then later on in the hour, I'm going to play my interview with Leslie Marshall. I was on her show, in fact, in Los Angeles, Buffalo, and Phoenix, to talk about the passport scandal. And also, I, of course, had to bring my very favorite topic, which is inherent contempt, and the conversation that I had with Congressman John Conyers. So first, I want to play for you some clips that, tell us about the war. The first, I'm sure you've heard. If you hadn't heard, I would be shocked. But this is the famous clip of Dick Cheney, who was heard just a week ago asking his feelings about the American people opposing the war.
Two-thirds of Americans say it's not worth fighting.
So?
Did you get it? So? So? Let me play it just one more time. Make sure you got it.
Two-thirds of Americans say it's not worth fighting.
So?
So? Well, that's his view. You know, it doesn't really matter whether or not we are fighting this war. It's just no big deal. Well, what is it that the president is saying now, 5 years after the war?
The battle in Iraq has been longer and harder and more costly than we anticipated.
Longer and harder and more costly than we anticipated. You know, we didn't think it would be this long. Well, that may be the first thing the president has said on Iraq that I agree with. So what else does he say?
The decision to remove Saddam Hussein was the right decision early in my presidency. It is the right decision at this point in my presidency, and it will forever be the right decision.
It will forever be the right decision. It was right then. It was right in the middle. It was always right. It will forever be right. Just keep telling yourself that, Mr. President. Back, of course, 5 years ago, Don Rumsfeld was asked how long he thought this war would take. This goes back to February of 2003, a month before we sent our troops to Iraq.
It could last, you know, 6 days, 6 weeks. I doubt 6 months.
6 days, 6 weeks. Oh, I doubt 6 months. I truly doubt 6 months. Couldn't possibly last 6 months as we enter our fifth year. So I went back and found what George Bush said the night that we sent troops into Iraq.
We have no ambition in Iraq except to remove a threat and restore control of that country to its own people. And you can know that our forces will be coming home as soon as their work is done.
Yeah, we don't really have any reason to have long-term bases there. We're not going to stay there. Our troops will come home as soon as the work is done. And as you heard from Don Rumsfeld, that might take 6 days, 6 weeks, but he doubts 6 months. Interesting. Well, we know what happened 6 weeks after the invasion, right? 6 weeks, Rumsfeld was right. I mean, 6 weeks after the invasion, we heard the president in his flight suit on a battleship saying,
"Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed."
See, we won. Rumsfeld was right. 6 weeks after the war began, we won it. Mission accomplished. What happened 6 months after the war? Rumsfeld said it wouldn't last 6 months. Dick Cheney was on Meet the Press, asked about the length of the war. This is from September 03, 6 months after the war in Iraq began.
Do you think the American people are prepared for a long, costly, and bloody battle with significant American casualties?
Well, I don't think it's likely to unfold that way, Tim.
See? It's not likely to unfold that way? Brutal battle? Significant American casualties? What are you smoking, Tim Russert? It's not that big a deal. It won't be that big a problem. That was September 03, 6 months after the war was in progress. Now listen to the president 1 year after the war began.
Today, as Iraqis join the free peoples of the world, we mark a turning point for the Middle East and a crucial advance for human liberty.
Turning point in the Middle East. Crucial advance for liberty. Okay, so we didn't win it 6 weeks or 6 months, but 1 year later, it's a crucial turning point. That would be March 04. Here's what he said in March 05.
We made a lot of progress. It's amazing how much progress has been made.
Okay, well, I don't know about crucial turning point, but we've made a lot of progress. It's amazing how much progress we've made. Okay, so from turning point down to a lot of progress, that was March 05. Now, here's what he said on the third anniversary of the war in March 06.
Terrorists haven't given up. They're tough-minded. They like to kill. There's going to be more tough fighting ahead.
4 years into it, this is 3 years, excuse me, 3 years into it, the terrorists haven't given up. There's a lot of tough fighting again. So we went from this thing may last 6 weeks, won't last 6 months, to mission accomplished, to a turning point, to really there's a lot of progress being made, to, the terrorists are tough. They won't give up. I'm afraid I didn't have time to give you a clip for 4 years into the war, last year, March 07. But I do have the quote from the president. And he said on the fourth anniversary of the war that he just received an update from the Iraqi prime minister. It will be difficult for Iraqis to make further progress toward reconciliation until Baghdad's citizens feel secure. This is 4 years into it. But we're working on it. He says, and this is a quote, last year, 4 years into the war, quote, "I want to stress that this operation is still in the early stages. It's still in the beginning stages. Fewer than half of the troop reinforcements have arrived in Baghdad." Now, he's talking about the surge, I guess. Still, it's amazing that he talks 4 years after the war and say that we're still in our early stages. And so here we are, 5 years after the war has begun. 5 years later. 5 years of thousands of deaths of American servicemen and women, 4,000, 10 times that amount wounded, and probably 1 million Iraqi civilians. 1 million. When we talk about the genocide in Rwanda, that's about 1 million people. Not that we killed 1 million Iraqis, but let's just say since we invaded, 1 million Iraqis have died in ways that are not very pleasant. Saddam Hussein was, like Tito in Yugoslavia, a dictator who kept down a lot of the animosities between Shia and Sunni and Kurd. And when he was gone, well, all those old animosities dredged themselves up. 1 million Iraqis dead, some 2 or 3 million exiled. We may not know how much. And what does the president say on the fifth anniversary of the war?
The battle in Iraq has been longer and harder and more costly than we anticipated.
Longer and harder and more costly than we anticipated. Oops! Well, we got the time a bit wrong now, didn't we? What did Dick Cheney say? Well, you've heard what he has to say.
2/3 of Americans say it's not worth fighting.
So?
One word, two letters, defines the Bush administration. So what? I don't care what the American people think. He went on to say that we have a choice every 4 years, assuming honest election machines and a Supreme Court that allows our president to sit. So what are we doing 5 years into the Iraq War? Well, we're trying the new strategy. We're bringing bucket loads of money, bucket loads, truckloads, tractor trailer truckloads, 7 18-wheeler tractor trailer truckloads full of trillions. Well, I was trying to do the alliteration, tractor trailer truckloads, trillions, full of billions of dollars in cash, wrapped up in nice $100 bills. And then a guy goes out with his backpack and he starts giving the money. Here, you, Al-Qaeda fighter, take some American taxpayer cash. Oh, I'm not joking. That's what we're doing. We're paying Al-Qaeda. It is a crime. It is a crime in the United States of America to aid terrorist groups by giving them funding. And yet we are giving funding to Al-Qaeda. We're paying them not to fight. We're paying them protection money. We're not supposed to give in to terrorists, but heck, we paid them protection money. And that's what it is. Hey, take these billions and please don't hurt our troops. Please, Mr. Al-Qaeda man, don't hurt our troops. Here's some nice billions for you. American taxpayers worked really hard for it. Please don't hurt our troops. We'll give you cash here so we don't have to give you cash in America. And this is the tough guy, George Bush? Yeah, we're paying off both sides. Bags of cash. Rest assured, when the money stops, they'll start fighting again. Some working surge. I want to spend most of the remainder of the hour with an interview I had on the Leslie Marshall Show. I talk a little bit about this. I talk mostly about the passport scandal. That's what she invited me on for. So listen to it. I am on live, though. So if you have a question or comment on the Leslie Marshall interview, just give us a call at 877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll find an appropriate point. We'll stop the clip, and I will take your calls. I am here to serve. But it was a very interesting show, and I want you to hear as much of it as you can. But like I said, I'm here. I'm ready for you. So if you have a question or comment on anything I've said with Leslie Marshall, you call in. And I'll be taking breaks throughout and commenting on some of the things we talked about. Let's roll the clip. She likes lots of music to start out. But while the music's playing, I guess I can tell you that Leslie Marshall is a talk show host in Buffalo, New York, and Los Angeles, and Phoenix, and a few other places. And she has me on from time to time to talk about what goes on in Washington. And here she is.
We're back. Leslie Marshall here. Welcome to the only true democracy in talk radio of, for, and by you, the people. Pick up the phone and join us, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Chris, are you putting that one on, yes or no? Because if that's regarding the right-wing wacko rant, I need to take that before Mark comes on. And so, okay. Mark Levine, host of the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop, where he serves up all the news the government does not want you to know, and that's one of the reasons I like Mark. Anything the government doesn't want us to know, I want to know. Mark's been on the show many times. It is a pleasure to have him with us. I'll tell you more about him and his background a little later, but let's get to it. Mark, welcome back. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. How are you doing?
Always a pleasure to be here. I'll take on a right-wing rant. You got one?
No. I already had one. I mean, I do a rant after this right-wing wacko of the day thing we do.
Oh, I see.
And the rant today was about President Bush's very cold, response when, he's told that we've hit the mark 4,000 and, close to a million Iraqis dead, including many innocent men, women, and children. It's like, we're doing well on the mission. It's like, what is that mission? But I know you're not here to talk about that tonight.
Well, I was just going to say that Vice President Cheney, to me, typified the entire administration when he gave a two-letter response.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
To a challenge to him.
That
to me is, he'd have to double it to get so-so, which tells you something about this administration.
Well, if after so, they played like Cyndi Lauper's True Colors, show your true colors shining through. Anyway, we're going to talk tonight about the passport file breach, and this is not a Democratic breach or a Republican breach. It seems like if you're running for president, you're going to be breached. That's Senators Obama, McCain, and Clinton. And Barack Obama calls it an outrageous breach of security. John McCain wants a full investigation as to why their passport files were pulled illegally. Should we be surprised, Mark? Do you think that many, many, many Americans' passports are being pulled illegally? These three just happen to be running for president, and probably the reason that their passports were pulled.
This is an administration that has never hesitated to spy on private citizens, whether it's warrantless wiretapping that is so illegal that the president is now trying to get retroactive immunity for it, to the national security letters that are sent to all of our credit companies and financial records and banks. And not only do they have to tell the government what we're spending on and who we're talking to on the phones, but they're not even allowed to tell us that we're being spied on, even though there's no warrant for doing so. In fact, I think that largely is what took down Elliot Spitzer, was they were going through his bank accounts. Whatever you think about him, I think we should fear the fact that I don't want the government to know everything that I'm spending. So the passport files is really very typical for this administration, an administration, in fact, that has taken politically motivated prosecutors and has made sure that Republicans don't get prosecuted while Democrats like Don Siegelman do. And the only thing that I want to know about this passport stuff, and of course we don't know all the facts yet, but it seems to me that to say that it's an equal opportunity thing, Barack Obama was spied on three times. Now, we know that Hillary Clinton was spied on once, but that one seems to have been explained as a training exercise. And I could kind of see that one maybe. You go and you say to people, hey, here's how the passport machine works.
You should use somebody so high profile for training.
Right.
Illegally pull is an illegally pull, whether it's one time or 10 times.
I guess I see the difference is he was pulled three times and no one told anyone about it. And it was only the third time, which happens to be the exact same day that John McCain was pulled, that a week later everybody found out. And what I find so interesting...
Now, see, without McCain being pulled at first, I started to think, especially Barack Obama, he lived in Indonesia, he has family in Africa. I thought it was Republicans trying to dig up dirt on him.
Leslie, I still think that. You know what's in a passport
file? Wait a minute. What are Republicans trying to dig up on John McCain then?
Well, see, look, here's the thing. There were three different employees. Now, okay, it's a bit conspiracy-minded, but bear with me here. Let's say they've spied on Barack Obama once, January 9th, right after he does well in the Iowa caucus. They spy on him again in February, right after he's won a terrific stream of victories in Virginia and Maryland. And then they think, uh-oh, we're going to get caught. These two people were fired. They might go all the way back to Karl Rove or some Republican operative. I have a clever idea. Let's, on March 14th, get one of our guys in there. We'll spy on everybody. We'll spy on Obama. We'll spy on McCain. We'll spy on Hillary Clinton. It would be a really nice way to cover it up, wouldn't it be? Now, I can't prove this. I'm not claiming I can. This is sheer speculation. But remember, they spied on him three times, and it only came out in the press after the third time when they also spied on John McCain. Could this be a way to cover up the damage? Remember, Karl Rove is a very smart man. He knew that if he sent these people, they would eventually be discovered. They were fired. And this is a way to say, it's no big deal. It's not after Barack Obama. We're just looking into everyone. And I don't think a lot of people realize what's in passport files. Many times in passport files, it's not just identity theft information, your social security number, your address, your emergency contact number, stuff like that, which is important. But it can also include arrest warrants, court orders, financial reports, just the kind of thing that if Barack Obama had anything sleazy on his record, they could find out. You know, many people were very anxious to find out that George Bush had broken the law. In fact, I think he's our only three-time convicted misdemeanant, if you will, to hold public office, having been convicted not just of drunk driving, but also for fighting and stealing. A lot of people don't know about those other two. But
oh, do tell us the fighting and stealing. You're right. Yeah. I'm one of those other people.
Well, he was a kid. Stealing was what he called a fraternity prank. He stole a Christmas wreath. And the fighting was after
the spirit
game,
of the season.
And he was drunk, and he got in a fight with someone. And
but he loved Jesus while he was doing it.
That was later in life, after he quit his cocaine habit, which apparently he's never denied, by the way, having that cocaine habit. He's never denied being convicted of cocaine. He just hasn't admitted either. All he says is he won't talk about anything that happened before he was 40. But many people believe that was...
How convenient.
Well, it is. It is. Barack
Obama...
If I were
running for president, I would do one... If I were running for president, not that I ever would, but if I were running for president, I would do one of two things. I'd either stand up and say, I won't answer any questions about my life prior to today.
Yeah.
Or I would say, sit down. I've smoked pot, slept around, blah, 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 blah. You know, I would just... List it all. Mark, hang tight. We'll be back, sweetie. We'll be back with our guest, Mark Levine, host of the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop. We want to hear from you regarding this passport file breach. 888-6-LESLIE.
Well, this is, of course, when they're taking their commercial break. Leslie Marshall, I should say, has
and we're back. I hope you'll join us, America. Leslie Marshall here. Welcome or welcome back to the only true democracy and talk radio of, for, and by you, the people. We're talking with Mark Levine, host of the Washington, D.C. radio show, The Inside Scoop, where he serves up all the news the government does not want you to know. I want to tell you a little bit about Mark. He's an ex-congressional attorney himself. He's serving the Democrats in the Judiciary and the Homeland Security Committees. And not only able to understand and explain how Washington really works, he actually even fought in some of the great battles of the early Bush administration. In California, you can hear him from his website, where he podcasts every day. Check it out, radioinsidescoop.com. Mark, thank you for holding. Welcome back. And folks, if you want to pick up the phone and ask questions or share comments in the program tonight in this hour while Mark is with us and talk about this passport file breach and why, as some are saying, this is a big deal, then pick up the phone and join us. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543 is the number. Question, though, Mark, although this is a big deal because it is illegal, okay, what they have done. And this government's been doing things illegally for so long, I think many of us have become desensitized, and we shouldn't. But what kind of information would a passport file hold other than where they've traveled and maybe former addresses or years they got passports or photos that may not be so flattering?
Well, I think we have to compare what we know it holds and what it may hold. But even if we just explore what we know it holds, which is things like your address, your Social Security number, your date of birth, your emergency contact information, that's in everyone's passport. And then it can hold some very interesting things, such as court orders, arrest warrants, financial reports, you know, if you had a marriage overseas or something. But it doesn't have to hold that extra information, because one piece of information leads to another. All I have to know is Barack Obama's Social Security number and address, and then I can get a credit report on him. I just go to Equifax, I type it in, boom, I know all about his credit. I can also apply and ruin his credit, right? It's the same things that you can do identity theft for. I can find out, let's say he had a court order. Maybe, I don't think there's one in his case, but if he had a prior marriage or if someone had alimony support, we could find out some embarrassing information on that kind
of
thing.
But if he did have a prior marriage, you will between now and November find out.
I'm sure that's true. But, you know, in his case, his parents had some interesting, you know, his mother was married, to his father, and then they were divorced, and then she married an Indonesian man, and maybe there was some troubles in that marriage. Again, I don't know this, I'm not assuming this, but if I wanted to know this, and I could use it to do a dirty trick on Obama, that's the kind of thing that, even if it weren't in the passport file, the information in the passport file, that plus some knowledge of how you run some identity checks, could lead me to find out all kinds of information about his African relatives, for example, or his Indonesian relatives. So I think we need to find out who these people shared the information with, and I don't know that we'll ever know that.
Absolutely crazy. Now, George Stephanopoulos on ABC News had said, not only this is a really big deal, but he said it couldn't come at a better time for Barack Obama because of the controversy over the Reverend Wright.
Well,
it seems to me the controversy over the Reverend did overshadow this.
Well, it did. It did. But I think it does help change the subject. I just think we need to remember that in Watergate, the only thing that we know happened, because it was never proved, by the way, that Richard Nixon broke into the Watergate Hotel. All we know is that some people broke into the Watergate Hotel. They were Republican operatives, and they were looking for information from the Democratic National Committee headquarters to find out some strategy in the 1972 election. And then we know that Nixon, whether or not he ordered it, and he may have, we just don't know, he did cover it up. In this case, of course, they can find out a lot more information than they could just breaking in and stealing one paper. I mean, you can find out electronically so much more information today than you ever could in 1972. And I wouldn't be surprised if this is something that could lead back to Karl Rove, except that he's very, very good at hiding his fingerprints. You remember that George Herbert Walker Bush, George Bush Sr., looked into Bill Clinton's passport file in 1992.
Right.
Because they wanted to see if he had renounced his citizenship. They thought that maybe when he went to England, he was trying to avoid the draft, and he might have renounced his citizenship. And if he had, that would have been his passport file. Bill Clinton never did that. So they didn't find any dirt, but the fact that they looked tells you something about, well, if Bush Sr. was willing to do it, Bush Jr. has shown a lot less moral compunction than his father.
It's very strange, too. Who would think somebody would risk all that? Do you know what I mean?
Well, the lower down.
Bill Clinton had his eye on being president since he was 16 years old.
Right. Yeah.
Who would renounce their? I mean, I do know. I have a friend whose husband who did simply because of business purposes, and they live here 6 months of the year and in the UK 6 months of the year. Not business purposes, tax purposes. He's getting taxed up the yin yang in the UK and the US. He dropped the U.S. because it was cheaper that way, you know. But most people, I don't think, would renege when you don't or drop it when you don't have to.
No, I think that's right. I think they're just looking for anything they can find. I mean, Obama has admitted that, you know, he smoked marijuana when he was a kid. Maybe they're looking for some arrest record. And to get that, they need a Social Security number. And then you just run it through a few data checks. You know, I used to be a trial lawyer. It's actually very easy, if you know someone's Social Security number, to find out all kinds of information about them, arrest records and so forth. You know, George Bush managed to hide his for a very long time because no one snooped on him, but I wouldn't be surprised if this leads back to someone. The question is whether they'll investigate it in time to find out. And I also wouldn't be surprised if the whole McCain thing was a way to cover it up. Again, I can't prove it right now, but I think it all goes to the question also of private contractors. I mean, we have all these non-government workers who are spying in our private files, and that's true not just in passport jobs but throughout the government these days.
And what bothered me also is that Condi Rice called Obama to personally apologize and has not done the same for Senators Clinton and McCain.
No, my understanding is she did. After
she did.
Calling Obama, she did.
They don't put it in the news.
No, it's in the more obscure news. Yes, she did call all three. But it's interesting to me, like I said, he was spied on three times, dating all the way back to January. So this is 10 weeks old, and we're only finding out about it now. And that's what makes me think that Obama was the real target of all of this, and that really shouldn't surprise anyone. I mean,
no.
Hillary Clinton, I think we know all the good and the bad about her.
I was going to say, if she does get the nomination against John McCain, they can't swift-boat her. I mean, what's left? Obama has the most to lose regarding being swift-boated, if you will, because he's new. He's fresh blood, fresh meat.
Right,
so
their swiftboat would be repeating the 90s. I mean, they certainly swiftboated her in the 90s. You know, they accused her of everything from...
Right, but what I'm saying is they haven't had an opportunity to do it with him. And, oh, the fun. He's young, he's black, and he's got a Muslim name. He lived in Indonesia and went to a Muslim school in Jakarta when he was a kid.
Yeah. A public school. I mean, it wasn't really a Muslim school. It was a... It'd be like...
Well, actually, Mark, to be correct, Indonesia is a Muslim country.
Right.
And their public schools are Muslim because that's the way that country operates, but not that most of us have a choice of where we go to school. I mean, you know, my husband's family is Muslim, and my husband went to a Christian school the first couple of years because they thought it was safer than the public school. And my husband was certainly not taught to believe, you know, Jesus died on a cross for his sins or anything. And he went to church every Wednesday with the rest of the kids, but he didn't know what he was being taught. He was, you know, 4 or 5 years old. How much time did you just say, Marky Mark? Oh, okay. Well, we're going to take a break shortly, but let me ask you another question. The Obama campaign wants a broader investigation, calling the incident an outrageous breach of security. Although I do agree it's an outrageous breach of security, wouldn't it be just more waste of taxpayer time and money to investigate his and the other breaches? I mean, even though it's terrible with, A, this administration, and, B, how nasty behavior can be, especially by the Republicans in an election year, and especially a presidential election year. I mean, are we really surprised?
Well, I'm not surprised, but I don't think that should be a reason not to investigate. Look, they may find nothing. It's possible these are just three separate incidents.
Yeah. But wait. Mark, you got a guy talking about change, all right? And all I've seen for the past nearly 8 years is a bunch of investigations that are cuckoo. I mean, what good's a 9/11 report when nobody got handcuffed and arrested or hung for treason? I mean, seriously, I mean, the list goes on and on. This is a candidate, you know, he himself, who says not only change, but he cares about the people. Well, the people right now care about the economy, and they care about losing their homes, and they care about gas prices, and they care about health care or lack thereof or affordable health care. They care about jobs going overseas. I mean, the list goes on and on. So I'm just saying, to me... You know what I'm saying? This doesn't help the American people at all. Any of them, any of the three of them, having this incident investigated. I think the incident should be investigated like later. Like let's get on with the business of the country and what the people in this country need.
You know, I think we can walk and chew gum at the same time. It's not the Obama campaign that.
No, this administration cannot walk and chew gum at the same time.
Well, that's true, but I don't want this administration to investigate. I guess I don't care whether this administration investigates. I want Henry Waxman to investigate. I want John Conyers to investigate. I want Congress to use its power of oversight.
But the bottom line is, Mark, even if they do, the president pardons every. You never. I mean, they have all these lovely investigations, they have lovely suits, and we get to see how eloquent they are, but it doesn't lead to anything. When we come back, we'll talk more about this. I know Marky Mark has a question. If you do, pick up the phone and join us now. Mark's only here for one more segment. Our guest, Mark Levine. We will be back after this. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Mark is host of the Inside Scoop. Check out his website during the break, radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be back.
You may have heard during this break, she refers to someone called Marky Mark. She's not talking about me, just so you know. She's talking about another Mark, which is her producer, Mark Grimaldi. So whenever you hear her talk about Marky Mark, that's her nickname for her producer. Leslie and I get along well, but we're not exactly on that kind of basis yet. In any case, you'll be hearing more of my interview with Leslie Marshall, and then there's still some time in this live show for you to call in at 877-4-HEAD-ON and let me know what you think about what I've said. Let me go back to the interview right now.
And we're back. Leslie Marshall here with our guest, host of the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop, serving up all the news the government does not want you to know. RadioInsideScoop.com is his website, and he is Mark Levine. Mark, thanks for holding a welcome back. I know that Marky Mark Grimaldi, our executive producer, had a question. Mark?
My question was basically, I guess I'll preface it by, I would be concerned, I mean, this is what the Bush administration is doing now when there are so-called investigations. If there's not, you know, I'd be concerned they might get even worse. But my question mainly is, say they do find out who did this, okay? And I know beyond, obviously, the people that were fired, what action could be taken against them? I mean, I know you're a congressional attorney. What could they actually be charged with, and what could it carry, if anything?
Oh, well, there's a criminal violation of the Privacy Act. It depends on, I guess, their motivation. And, of course, in the criminal law, they examine motivation all the time. One of the things is it just idle curiosity, which is what they claim it was? That's probably fairly low. But if they can prove this was done for a political reason, this was sent by Karl Rove or someone in the Republican Party to do this, or I guess someone in the Democratic Party as well, then that's the kind of thing that would be a felony, would be severe, and you could see a year or two in prison.
All right, thank you.
Mark, speaking of, do you agree with me that there are a lot of you know, investigations, inquiries, judiciary hearings, etc., that don't yield punishment. They may even yield a verdict, but they don't yield punishment. So what good are they?
Well, you're right, Leslie. In fact, one of the things I was just talking about with John Conyers yesterday, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, is how to make these investigations work. And the answer is, right now, the administration is stonewalling. And this is unique in American history. I mean, Bill Clinton was served 1,000 subpoenas, and he responded to each and every one of them. Now, he complained about a few of them, and he may have been slow about a few of them.
But he also was the president, and he was the president.
Well, that's right. And George Bush has been served, his people have been served a number of subpoenas, and they just generally refused to obey. In the famous case of Harriet Myers and Josh Bolton, they simply said, no, we're not going to show up. Now, under the Constitution, they have absolutely no right to do that. And it's interesting that Harriet Myers, who George Bush tried to put on the Supreme Court, has such complete disregard for the law and the Constitution. She is more loyal to the president than she is to her country. She actually is a traitor to her country because she's saying, my president, right or wrong, the law be damned. So Congress went and held them in contempt. But then there's another battle that's looming, and that is that the way to hold them in contempt in recent times is to get the U.S. attorney in the District of Columbia to go and file charges against them. Well, the U.S. attorney also thinks he's above the law. Like Harriet Myers, he said, my country be damned. I don't give a damn about the law. I'll throw my law license out the window because the president tells me to do this, and I say Sig Heil. Well, he didn't quite say that, but the intent is the same. He's saying, I won't obey the law. I will obey the president. But what Congress knows about is a very little-known technique called inherent contempt that hasn't been used since 1934 because every president since 1934 has simply obeyed the law. But Congress has the inherent right under the Constitution, it's been upheld by the United States Supreme Court, to literally grab Harriet Myers and Josh Bolton with their sergeant-at-arms and imprison them until they cooperate. Now, there used to be a little jail cell at the bottom of the Capitol. In fact, it's still there. They've just shut it up. I guess they could reopen it, or they could just stick her in someone's office with handcuffs. But the point is, they have the right. The sergeant-at-arms can be ordered by the House of Representatives to go and pick them up and hold them until they agree to testify. And I talked with Chairman John Conyers about this, and he agreed it was something he wanted to do, but says right now he doesn't have the votes. So I've talked with some other members of Congress, and frankly, your listeners could really help out. They could call the Capitol House switchboard, call their member of Congress at 202-225-3121. That's just how you reach your member of Congress. And tell them, hey, I think Congress should make sure the president obeys the law. Hold these people in prison until they talk. Otherwise, you're giving up congressional oversight forever. So John Conyers says he won't say he wants us to do that, but he says that he wants to do that. And I think we could help him out a lot.
Interesting. Very interesting. Oh, we had somebody had a question for you, and then they left. Impatience is not a virtue. But then again, you know, and don't get me wrong, I feel people should call their congressmen or congresswoman. I do feel they should call their senator, write letters. But I think the problem with America is not only... they can't afford the stamp right now. Postage is going up. The economy sucks. But in addition to that... they're so apathetic that nobody will listen to them because they've seen a House and a Senate not listening, and they've seen nearly 8 years of a president not only not listening but directly taking action contrary to the will of the people, his constituency.
You know, it's a catch-22 here. Americans say that Congress isn't listening to them, so they're apathetic, so they don't call. And the members of Congress say, I'm not getting any phone calls. You know, I'm not going to put my neck on the line and do something that hasn't been done since 1934 and send the sergeant-at-arms out to imprison Harriet Myers unless I think that Americans care about the Constitution being followed. And Americans, yeah, they're worried about their jobs and they're worried about their health care. And if they don't care about congressional oversight and they're not calling, the member of Congress says, you know what? I'll just do the safe thing, which is nothing. But this matters to everything else. It matters to health care. It matters to the economy, because when you have a corrupt administration that refuses to investigate itself, the only people that can investigate it are Congress. And in every other administration, when Congress demands documents, the administration turns it over. This is the first one to say, Congress, screw you, or a not-so-nice term instead.
Right.
That Dick Cheney has used. And so I think this really goes to fundamental principles. And, yeah, I'm in Washington, D.C., where we watch these battles. But they do matter, because if you don't think the president is above the law, I would ask that people just make a simple phone call. You can send an email, but let your member of Congress know you don't think the president is above the law. You're right, Leslie, that these investigations are often going nowhere. But they're going nowhere because the president is stonewalling and because Congress is afraid to assert its authority.
Why is Congress, and that's another, why, and I know they are, and I agree with you, why? Why is Congress afraid?
Why haven't gotten those phone calls? See, I think Congress is inherently, they want to get elected, so they don't want bad publicity. So if they're going to stick their neck out, and admittedly, this is a practice that hasn't been used in 70 years, they're not going to do so unless they know there's a lot of public support. And if the public doesn't care, well, they'll just focus on bringing pork home to the district and the other things that they can brag about to their constituents.
Okay, let's quickly go to the island of Hawaii and go to Daily Dave. Hey, Dave, question or comment for Mark?
Yeah, real quick. Thank you very much, Leslie. Hi, Mark. How you
Hi.
Doing?
I'm good.
Good. I think the fact is that Congress doesn't seem, besides this effort that you're speaking of this evening, I don't think that Congress has a judicial effort or a police effort to make people. I mean, you have to use force to make people to do stuff.
Yeah, this is its force. This is the Congressional Police Force. They have a sergeant-at-arms that works for the House and works for the Senate and can arrest people if the entire House or the entire Senate votes someone in contempt. You're right, they don't have a big police force, but this is the power they do have. In fact, it's the only power they have to arrest someone. I mean, the only other power they have is impeachment, but they're not going to impeach anyone if they can't make anyone turn over documents to them.
Right. So when the administration has the sheriff, the county patrol, the local town cop, the city cop, and all these different mannerisms that they can use to throw somebody in jail, the third arm of government only has contempt of Congress to arrest someone. You have to force someone to comply by creating an imprisonment situation to...
You're right, Dave, but I want you to picture this. I want you to picture the sergeant...
How much time, Mark? Did you say?
I want you to picture the sergeant-at-arms approaching the White
House.
Oh,
okay, we don't have time. I'm sorry, guys.
Oh,
we're
okay.
Out. We're out. I was so listening to what you guys had to say. I missed what Mark said time-wise. Mark, you know you'll be on again. We love you, and you do a great job. I'm Leslie Marshall, America. We'll be right back.
Well, I didn't get a chance to finish my comment to Dave from Hawaii on Leslie Marshall's show, but that's the advantage of being on Head On Radio Network. I can explain what I was trying to say in that limited time frame that they have on terrestrial radio. Look, the caller is right in one sense, but very wrong in another. The caller is right in every specific which he said, in the sense that, yes, the Congressional Police Force is very, very small. The commander-in-chief of the executive branch, the president of the United States, controls an entire military. He literally has an army and a navy and an air force and a marine. He controls everything. In fact, he can even deputize the national and state police forces. About the only people he doesn't control, in one sense, is the National Guards of various states, but he can even deputize them as well. As you may recall, that's what President Eisenhower did to integrate the Central High School in Arkansas some 50 years ago. So yes, the president has literally an army at his command. Congress got one guy. Well, the guy has a little staff. His name is he's the sergeant at arms. I forget his name right now. They change. The sergeant at arms probably has, I don't know, 10 people working for him. Okay. 10 against millions. It's not exactly a fair fight. And no one is saying that the sergeant-at-arms and his merry band could overtake the armed guards guarding the White House. But what I was trying to tell the caller from Hawaii was that he doesn't need force. The force is in the public opinion. Because if the sergeant-at-arms and his merry band of men, or just the sergeant-at-arms alone, comes to the White House and says to the President of the United States, turn her over. Turn over Harriet Myers. She's in contempt of Congress. You, the President, have sworn to uphold the Constitution. Are you going to turn her over? And he could stand and face the military at the White House. frankly, I don't know that that's the way I'd go. You could do it that way if she escapes to the White House. Frankly, I think I'd get her as she's leaving her home, you know, traveling near the Capitol. Just have ask one of the Capitol Police to pull her over. There is, by the way, a Capitol Police force that I'm sure could be enlisted in this regard. And I think I'd rather do it that way. But if she runs and escapes to the White House, just think of those pictures. The sergeant-at-arms against all the troops in the White House demanding that the president follow the law. That's the point. That's the point. Not that we're going to invade the White House and grab Harriet Myers, but that Congress is asserting its authority. And as I said to John Conyers, if you heard my interview yesterday, you know, put her in an office somewhere. There used to be a jail at the basement of the Capitol. They've closed it up. I think they should open it again. In fact, that might be an interesting thing to do. Just reopen that jail, just as a sign of saying we're ready for Harriet Myers. Wouldn't that be? You know, I didn't think of that. I just thought of it now, thinking on the job. Just reopen that, unseal it. It's probably still there. I don't know that they've taken out the bars and all. And say, look, Harriet Myers, you're wanted to serve some time. I know what my next question is going to be for John Conyers. I think I'll ask the architect of the Capitol. I bet they know the answer to that. I'll get back to you on that. In any case, whether or not they can use the jail cell at the bottom of the Capitol, they can certainly, as I said, take her, put her in someone's office, feed her, don't torture her. I don't believe in that. Even though that administration supports it, it would be just, but still, no. We won't torture her, we'll feed her, we'll simply imprison her until she agrees to cooperate. That's what contempt is about. That's how the sergeant-at-arms of the Capitol can pick her up and hold her in jail. Lock the door. As I said to John Conyers, he can make her do the perp walk with the handcuffs. I'd like to see that. You know, it's interesting. Some 170 years ago, President Andrew Jackson, was ordered by the Supreme Court, another branch of Congress, to do some things. He was specifically ordered to stop the Trail of Tears, to stop the marching of indigenous peoples, Native Americans, the people who were here first, y'all, in my home state of Tennessee and elsewhere in that region, Cherokees and Choctaws. You know, of course, Andrew Jackson picked them up and marched them out of their homes and into what is now Oklahoma. They had lived there for thousands of years. The white man wanted the property. Sorry, gotta go. One of our nation's most sorry points in a very sorry history we have. Well, the Supreme Court, like Congress, doesn't have an army. And when Chief Justice John Marshall said to Andrew Jackson, President of the United States, in an official Supreme Court order ordering Andrew Jackson to stop expropriating property, to stop the Trail of Tears, Andrew Jackson responded very simply. He said, John Marshall, when you get your own army, you can tell me what to do. And he didn't, obviously, obey. So the caller had a point, and I get that point. The president has an army. The other two branches of our government do not. However, that doesn't mean that they are powerless. Their power lies in us, the American people. In all the discussion of the Second Amendment, which says that a militia being necessary to secure a free state, the right to bear arms shall not be infringed. The Second Amendment, if it means anything at all, it means that we, the people, have the right to protect the security of a free state. We don't have the right, under the Second Amendment, to use arms to kill people, to go into schools with guns, to give to the mentally ill. We don't have a right to do that. But the one thing we do have a right to do with our arms, according to the Second Amendment, this is what I believe the Second Amendment is about, is we have the right to use it to protect a secure state, a free state. So, if the president disobeys Congress, well, Congress can impeach him, remove him from office. The president disobeys the Supreme Court. It's a bit tougher, but the Supreme Court also has power of contempt, can also hold the president in contempt. Indeed, Bill Clinton was found in contempt when he didn't want to tell the whole truth about a certain Monica Lewinsky, that woman. Look, the power is in the people. It's in the media. All Congress has to do, and this is what I've been pressing John Conyers so hard on, all he has to do is start holding Harriet Myers in prison. The media would be all over it. Again, it could be in a congressional office. There would be camped out day, hour three, hour ten. It would be described as a constitutional crisis. It's not a constitutional crisis. It's how the government's supposed to work. All Congress is saying is we have the right of oversight. It's civil contempt. Civil contempt, by the way, is different from criminal contempt. Civil contempt is when you hold someone in jail until they do something. They say that in civil contempt, you hold your own jailhouse keys. All you have to do is free yourself by doing what you're required to do. That is the power that Congress has. So, yes, they don't have an army, but holding Harriet Myers would do a world of good. You should know that after the interview with Jan Schakowsky, Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, you heard that yesterday. I had a long talk with her. Just in fact, the fact that she's willing to have a long talk with me tells you what an amazing public servant she is. A lot of public servants just run and hide from the people. You know, I've tried to get Jim Webb, my senator from Virginia, to do the right thing with regard to warrantless wiretapping, and he just is running and hiding from me. But Jan Schakowsky, a congresswoman from Illinois, who is not my congresswoman and really doesn't owe me anything, not only took a public interview with me, but spoke with me in detail in private. And I talked to her about inherent contempt. I reminded her of the 1934 Supreme Court decision that says it's okay. I told her how I felt no president need ever obey Congress again if they don't force this president to obey. I told her that every president in American history, until this one, eventually obeyed a congressional subpoena. I reminded her of that. And also said, as she recognized, that this court proceeding won't come till too little too late. If we're vindicated 3 years down the line and a court orders in 2011 that the Bush administration should have turned over documents, what kind of Pyrrhic victory is that? You know what a Pyrrhic victory is? It comes from the Pyrrhic Wars in ancient Greece. It's a battle where you win the victory but lose the war. Some victory that would be. So I talked with her about inherent contempt, and she agreed to talk to the Democrats in private in their caucus to try to win the votes. John Conyers wants to do it, but he doesn't have the votes. I told her about my talk with John Conyers. I also told her about an idea that she was very impressed with, she hadn't thought about, which is to disbar the U.S. attorney that is refusing to enforce the contempt sanction. The law says that the U.S. attorney has to enforce contempt and has refused. So he is showing that he is not acting as a lawyer. He's not obeying the law. He's not obeying his oath to uphold the Constitution. Only the president can fire him, but the D.C. The D.C. district bar can disbar him. And she really liked that idea. And, of course, D.C. now, you know, probably what will happen is they'll go to court and they'll say, well, D.C., don't interfere in the nation's business. Look, contempt is vital. It's vital to taking over, to recognizing that Congress does have power of oversight. I've been asked in the chat room about the U.S. Marshals. Can they do things? The U.S. Marshals, by the way, work for all three branches of government. They work, some work for the court, some work for the president, some work for the Congress. Yes, I'm sure the Sergeant-at-Arms could send some U.S. Marshals to do the job. And I just imagine it. I imagine outside the White House gates, a long line of military Secret Service protecting the president, protecting Harriet Myers, and in a smaller line,
but a group of very determined public officials working for the United States Congress saying, turn her over. Who are you loyal to, the president or your country? And in my dream, the members of the Secret Service, the members of the president's army, one by one, switch sides and join the congressional line, understanding that at the end of the day, their loyalty is not to the president, but to the United States of America. Keep that in mind when you say that Congress doesn't have much of a police force. What a glorious day that would be. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tune in next.